Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to ITE 1, Module 7, My How Time Flies. Hope you've all had a good week. Just to kick off the module, what we'll do is go through and, as usual, do a quick quiz on last week's, which was where we were talking about portable devices. So, chat window's open, and question 1. Which two features make laptops a good alternative to desktop computers? Is it A, their compact design, B, lower costs, C, enhanced capabilities, or D, portability? So choose two. That was a nice easy one, wasn't it? A and D, compact design, and they're portable. Who said C? Okay. All right, question 2. Which laptop device is commonly hot swappable? Is it A, the display, B, the internal hard drive, C, the PC card, or D, the RAM? Just say CC. That's it, CC. Yes, it's the PC card. Well done. Hey, which type of memory is used in laptops? Is it A, DIMM, B, RIM, C, SIM, or D, SODIMM? Some interesting varieties there. It is D, SODIMM, S-O-D-I-M-M, used in laptops. I love these answers that come in after the answers given. Okay. Question 4. Which power management control was introduced prior to the advanced configuration and power interface even? Was it A, ACCI, or B, ACPI, C, AMD, or D, APM? And for those that said D, you were correct. It was APM. Okay, next question. What do FireWire and USB devices have in common?
Me. Breakable connectors. Sort of just about every device.
Okay, Cisco answer is... now, you've got choice of A, only one of these devices can be used at a time. B, they are considered hot swappable devices. C, they cannot be used with desktop PCs, or D, they are parallel communications devices. And you are correct with B, they're hot swappable. Okie dokie, next question.
Which means if you grab onto one, that you hear this,
they go, ooh,
and go, ow!
That's hot. Okay, what should a user do when operations on a USB memory device have been completed and it's necessary to remove it from the laptop computer? Should you A, rip it out, B, no, I'll be correct, A, reboot the computer, B, choose Start, Control Panel, System, select the USB device, the Properties tab, and then click Remove, C, click the Safely Remove Hardware icon in the Windows System Tray, or D, just rip it out? Yes, they are correct. Yes, C, that's correct. You click the Safely Remove Hardware icon.
And then swear when it goes, BINK! Your device cannot be safely removed, another program is accessing it. And then you pull out a copy of Unlocker and starts...
Has anyone found that that's a real bother on the EPC?
It can be. I'll tell you what it usually is that's accessing the flash drive. It's AVG.
Oh.
Because have you ever noticed when you pull it... When you pull open the My Computer icon and open your thumb drive, if it's full of executables, your whole computer sort of shudders and shakes, and CPU load goes through the roof, and then you wait a bit and it finishes its little scanny scan, and that was then everything settles down and it actually closes all the files it has open.
I've found on the EP, even if I leave it like half an hour or something, it still hasn't released the stuff.
I think there's actually a Windows utility that will tell you what has what files open, so we might see if we can find that. I think it's in the NT Power Tools, and we can actually have a look and see what is actually keeping the files open, because I'd be interested to know. So we'll get back to everybody on that.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, question 7. Which two steps are recommended when you're cleaning a laptop screen, the LCD screen? Do you A, clean the display using tissue moistened with water? B, disconnect all devices attached to the laptop prior to cleaning the display screen? C, remove all sources of power immediately after cleaning the display screen? D, power off the laptop prior to cleaning the display screen? Or E, do you remove the LCD screen from the laptop? Okay, you need to B, disconnect all the devices that are attached to the laptop prior to cleaning the display screen. And the other one is to power off your laptop prior to doing it. Okay, question 8. What is the easiest and least expensive way to extend the life of a laptop and keep it in optimal working order? Do you A, replace all the parts regularly? B, clean the laptop regularly? C, do a clean reinstall of the operating system? D, backup important information monthly? Or E, clean it on a regular basis with hydrochloric acid? I just thought I'd add that one in for good luck. Okay, and yes, the answer is B, that's correct. You've got to clean it regularly. Okay.
Anybody on this channel? So, anybody on this channel running a web crawler across our site? It looks like somebody's crawling our web pages.
Jenny, stop crawling off the web pages, will you?
Okay, nobody on here is doing it. Okay, we're going to have to track down the person and string them from the clothesline. And if you can come across any methods of stopping people from crawling our web pages, dear, that would be good if you come up with anything that, whether we put robots.txt or bust them up bad so they can't sort of get web whacker and reef down our site.
Okay, well, last week we were talking all about laptops, portable devices and phones and all that. Today we're talking about printers. Also about scanners. A lot of this seems very basic to a lot of people, but we need to go over it for you to pass your Cisco exams, and also there are people that haven't sort of had a lot to do with the different types of printers. So just to start off, anyone want to tell me some different types of printers that are available? Not brands so much, just different types.
Thermal.
Yep.
Laser, dot matrix, and inkjet.
Inkjet, laser.
Daisy wheel.
Yes, the good old daisy wheel. Clack, 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 clack.
It was sort of more of a... or something.
Yes, something like that. I can't do it as well as that. Yeah, that's correct. So we have lots of different types of printers that are available. And everybody's got their different reasons for choosing a particular printer that suits their needs. So what was that? Yeah. Plotters. What are plotters?
No, a plotter is not a printer. Well, I mean, it sort of is, but when we talk about plotters, a plotter is a device that holds pens in a moving carriage. Usually there are two moving carriages, that one runs on the x-axis and one runs on the y-axis, and you put a whopping big bit of paper down, and then you the pens run on the bit of paper. So, I mean, it'd be a really good idea, really good method of printing out a huge picture of your girlfriend if you had, like, an A3 plotter and you could print out this picture. Not that you would, but that's just an example. It's sort of for big, sort of architectural-style work and stuff where you need to do big pictures and stuff. And you actually get A0 plotters, which are gigantic. A4, for anybody who doesn't know, is 210 by 297 millimetres. A3 is double that size. A2 is double that size. A1 is double that size. And A0 is double that size. So I can't be bothered working out how big A0 is, but if somebody wants to Google it up, they can look it up.
Hmm.
Yeah, I am a smart backside.
Oh, and we will move along on that note. Okay, so most of the printers that are around today are either going to be inkjet printers, and they use electrostatic spray technology, and the other type of technology is the laser printers, and they've got a technology that is electrophotographic. Some of the things we're going to think about when we choose a printer. Okay, guys, you want to tell me what you would be looking at if you're going out to purchase a printer?
Capacity.
Yep. Yep.
Inexpensive.
Yep. Ease of use, yeah. Yeah, they're all
good. How about lack of funky menus that blind people can't access? That's not in the notes.
I just figured that was under ease of use.
Oh, fair enough.
Now, they're all good and valid. Yep, speed's a good one. Ever had one that, you know, you print a page and it just, hurry up, I'll make a cup of coffee while the page prints.
Does anybody remember the old dot matrixes that used to go...
Used to have one of those.
Yeah, they're all really good reasons.
Oh, come on. Anybody want to say, well, tell us what TCO is? That's all a bit manager-like of you. What is TCO?
Total cost of ownership.
It is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, TCO is total cost of ownership, and it's one of those managerial buzzwords where they all sort of stand up the front of the meeting and go, before we implement this new system, we have to know what the total cost of ownership is. And the total cost of ownership is how much it's going to cost you to buy the thing, service the thing, keep up looking after the thing, put all the consumables in the thing, and eventually chuck the thing out and recycle it. And in fact, if you're in Europe and you don't recycle within EU regulations, people come around and get recycled rulers and belt your knuckles. So
they're going to knock on your door, ring on your bell,
tap on your window, and they're going to knock and ring and tap until you recycle.
Pass.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
Ah, good one. Thanks.
840 by, is that centimetres or millimetres? Millimetres, I assume.
Yeah, it'd be a bit bigger in centimetres, wouldn't it?
I think they'd be millimetres. Millimetres. I'll settle down now.
Well, I was enjoying it, actually, so... He's on a roll this morning, folks. That's good. All right. So those are all very valid reasons, that considerations you'd be looking at if you are looking for a new printer. So capacity, I guess, is the an important thing. Speed for me is all important. So pages per minute. I'm not very patient with it, and I like my page to come out pretty fast. So otherwise I tend to pull on it and rip on it and all the things you shouldn't do. The choice whether you're going to use laser, whether you're going to, so you're looking at quality. Also, how reliable is it? What sort of warranty has it got? How difficult or how easy it is to use as well. The other thing that's an ongoing thing is it, considering whether, you know, replacement cartridges and that type of thing. Have you ever been to buy a printer cartridge and you come out with a new printer, because the cartridges come with the new printer and the whole thing is cheaper? It's happened to me. cheaper to throw the old printer away, and sad but true. Okay, a number of ways you can connect your printer. Who wants to tell me some of those different ways?
USB.
Yeah. Okay, everybody. Everybody can say ASP. How about some other methods?
Parallel.
Yeah, parallel. Mm-hmm.
Wireless.
Yes. Oh, I think we've covered them all. In fact, one of my friends, they had an infrared printer that used to sit at the back of the classroom, and he sat sort of the desk that was right up the back, and for whatever reason, the infrared port on his laptop lined up with this printer, so he always used to get this printer detected and available to print on. So one day, to get the teacher to turn off the availability of the printer, he typed up a Word document which was in a very large font, about 36 point, that said, "Help, help, I'm trapped inside this printer," and then printed it. And that...
Oh dear. Okay. Yeah, so we've talked about a whole range of ways that you can connect up your printer. Many people now going for Wi-Fi. There are a number of standards that are associated with Wi-Fi technology. They all start with that IEEE standard, IEEE, and one is 802.11b, and that gives you data transfer rates at the rate of 11 megabits per second.
This is in the printer module?
This is in the printer module on Wi-Fi.
Go figure.
And the 802.11g, which gives you transfer rates at 54 megabits per second, thank you, even. Okay. That's just a little sort of throw in on the Wi-Fi printers there. Okay, now laser printers, which is sort of my favourite mode at the moment, because I'm looking for quality printing, and when you are, you know, that's one of the decisions you need to make. Not always the fastest printers, unless you're paying a lot of money for them. They have a metal cylinder, and it's coated with a light insulating material. So what happens is the beam of laser light actually strikes or reflects onto the drum, and that conducts, acts as a conductor at the point where the light hits it. As your drum rotates, the laser beam then draws an electrostatic image upon the drum. So that latent image is then passed by your supply of ink or toner, and it's a dry ink in the laser ones, and it gets attracted to it. So the drum then turns and brings that image in contact with the paper. Next thing that happens is the toner gets attracted to it, and so it goes through a fuser, through a set of hot rollers, or like a set of hot rollers, and it melts the toner into the paper. Hopefully all that takes a very short time. But as I say, some of them are quite slow, depending on how much you pay for your laser printer.
I was going to make a point. Sorry, I was just going to say, everybody, that procedure, the one where it talks about developing, fixing, yada yada yada, it's in your exam. You really have to know.
It is.
You have to know what order it's in. So, because this course is sponsored by HP, and HP make printers, there is a question in the exam that says, what is the correct order of the procedure of a laser printer? So it starts off with, I think it's developing, isn't it? Fixing. Oh, no, cleaning. Cleaning. It starts off with cleaning because it cleans the drum. Yeah, cleaning, developing, fixing.
Well, you've got a beam of laser light. Da da da. Yeah. Drum rotates, electrostatic charge. Da da da. Yes. Dry ink to the toner, then onto the paper, through a fuser, melts the ink onto the paper. Make sure you go and review it.
Has anybody noticed, though, that, I mean, the cost of lasers has come down incredibly. You can...
Oh, hugely.
For about $100, you can get, like, a Brother laser that will do about 18, or maybe 12 to 18 pages per minute. Not usually duplexing, but you can't have everything. And even the colour lasers, you can get some cheap colour lasers for about $600. I've got no idea, $600 to $800. I've got no idea how good they are, but they're there for about $600 to $800. It can cost you $1,200 for the cartridges, Mr. Cynic, but that's what you look into first before you actually buy the printer, before you put your hard-earned money down. The other thing to keep in mind is that the drum on the Brother printers is good for about 12,000 pages, and then you throw out the printer and get a new one. So if you want something that is has more longevity, you'll buy a more expensive printer such as a Kyocera or a Minolta or one of the sort of, you know, $600 to $800 mono lasers, so that you're not replacing the whole printer when the drum dies, because the drum is about the cost of the printer.
They were well over $3,000 when they first came out, laser printers.
Oh, they were hugely expensive when they first came out. And quite slow too.
The other thing to remember about laser printers, just while we're on the topic, is when you want to warm that drum up to actually do the fusing, attract the ink to get the image on there, that actually draws about 8 to 10 amps of power. Do not put your laser printer on the ups, otherwise you will overload your ups. So you're looking at a very high power draw for about 5 or 10 seconds, and you're looking at drawing about sort of 8 to 10 amps, maybe. So, yeah, don't sort of put the kettle and the laser printer on the same power board either.
Now, in the notes, too, you get a mnemonic that's going to help you memorise the steps. We love mnemonics down here, don't we? And the mnemonic is, continuous care will delay trouble forever. So that's cleaning, conditioning, writing, developing, transferring, fusing. Okay, so it's just a, you can make up whatever mnemonic you want as long as you remember the order, because you'll get it in your exams. Okay. Also, the other thing that comes up in your exam is what I'm about to talk about, which is the primary corona wire, or the primary grid, which is a roller, it's a conditioning roller. Yeah, and it's got very high voltage in it, and it is brought up in your exam, I seem to recall. Runs at about 6,000 volts, so not a good idea to be working on.
Hang on, did Kyron want to say something? He's typed his name in here.
Yes, Kyron?
Yeah, actually, I didn't understand the after like transferring the thing, transferring, there is fusing, what exactly that mean? I didn't understand that.
Okay, basically what happens is when you charge the drum, the laser actually draws on the drum, and you actually charge the drum so that it attracts the toner. And then when you put the paper through, you actually press the paper against the drum, and it runs through the rollers. So the rollers is what jams the actual hot toner into the paper, and that's how the image is transferred from the drum to the paper. It really is covered in your notes. I'd really read that stuff yourself if you haven't already, and then ask us if you still don't understand it, because they do actually explain it quite well. The other thing to keep in mind, however, is that you will not be working on a laser printer as a blind person. And if you are, then you will be probably hurled across the room in a red smudge on the wall when you come across that primary corona wire that we're just talking about. You should refer all printer servicing to a qualified technician, but I can understand that, you know, wanting to understand how the actual transferring works is important. So do have a look through the segment in the notes if you haven't already, and then ask us if you're still having problems, because it is actually quite well explained, or at least well enough explained that you don't need to know much more than that.
It's actually hugely explained. But that mnemonic is what you're going to need for your exam, which is the cleaning, conditioning, writing, developing, transferring, and fusing. So continuous care will delay trouble forever. Just remember the little word to remember what order it's actually in. Okay.
Okay.
We're talking about the... Yeah. And we're happy to talk about any of these things again, so... you know, if you do read your notes and find that you still want something explained, just get in touch. That's fine. All right. Now we've.
Oh, I was just going to say, and then if it's not really that important, we'll tell you to build a bridge. Because like look it up on Wikipedia or something. Because you don't actually have to understand how the process works to get through the course, but it is interesting. So we'll try and explain it to the best of our ability. But then if beyond that, then maybe. Maybe your local printer technician could explain it better, because different people explain things in different ways. So, yeah, we'll do our best to explain it, but then if that doesn't work, we'll send you to Wikipedia, and then if that doesn't work, you can ask some other people.
Okay. Now, we talked earlier about some of the earlier types of printers, the daisy wheel that Terry mentioned, impact printers. They're sort of like, well, you've got print heads that strike the inked ribbon. They were the earlier type ones we saw. And when you needed to change the inked ribbon, it was really good fun. And you got ink all over your fingers. But they were fairly cheap to change the consumables that were, inexpensive. A lot of them had that continuous paper feed. You remember those long chains of paper? Yeah, so there were some advantages, but also disadvantages. Things like they were pretty noisy. They had limited capabilities. They were slow. The dot matrix printer, the daisies, and the impact printers were some of the earlier ones. They do go into a lot of details in those in your notes too. What we try and do with the notes is go through and pick out what's going to be, because the modules are quite large, pick out the important things for you to know. So, but do have a read of your modules, as Kerry mentioned, because there is a lot of information in there. It's quite interesting, but we just don't have time to go through everything that's there. So we pick out what's relevant for you. Okay, the inkjet printers that a lot of us use are fairly reasonably priced. I just saw one for about $49 the other day. They're getting cheaper and cheaper. As I mentioned, though, it's often cheaper to go and buy the new printer than it is to go and buy new cartridges. You get two new cartridges with it. Makes me annoyed, actually. Anyone else get annoyed with that?
One of the reasons why they do that, and I think I explain this every year, which is good because I'll do it this year, is the printer manufacturers rub their hands.
I think I say it annoys me.
You do. The printer manufacturers, when they make ink, they rub their hands together and go, "Oh, liquid gold," because it really is expensive to make the inks, and they really make their money on the inks, not the printers. And the other thing I was just going to point out very quickly about inkjets is there is a problem with blind people and inkjets. Not actually with blind people as such, but one of the problems with inkjets is it's very difficult for you to tell whether the inkjet is actually printing or not, or whether it's run out of ink. At least you can smell the toner on a piece of paper if you print it through a laser. And the other problem is if you don't use your printer, say, once a week or once a month, as we discovered, your nozzles will clog up. Well, your printer's nozzles will clog up. I don't know about your nozzles. So you obviously don't want your printer's nozzles to clog up, because then you've got to go and soak the cartridges in isopropyl alcohol and then syringe ink into them, and it really is quite messy. And not that I would condone this behaviour, but if you want a hackable printer where you can refill all the cartridges and do all sorts of interesting stuff, there are actually little hack chips for the Epson range of printers where you can re-ink your cartridges and stuff infinitely. Well, as long as you can pay for the ink. The other thing I'd like to point out too, very quickly, is don't go down to the local discount shop and buy the cheapest ink you possibly have. You can possibly buy, because Epson had a good ad campaign a while ago that actually showed somebody putting concrete into their washing machine, and then the washing machine would of course die, and then it would say down the bottom, cheap ink in your printer is like concrete in your washing machine, don't do it. And it's true. I have heard printer technicians use four-letter words that I didn't even know existed. And what ends up... Who did that?
That was Grace.
That's probably because you couldn't tell that... Oh, this is trying to re-ink the cartridges. Okay, do not laugh.
I bought new cartridges.
Oh, no. That's really uncool. But the other thing is, so make sure that when you do these things, if you put the really cheap ink in, it will actually just clag your printer up. As I said, I've heard printer technicians use four-letter words that I've never even heard before, and swearing and cursing about these people that put this cheap ink into these printers and then want the printers to work. And it really is like clag. It's disgusting. Oh, clag, if you don't know, is like this water-based glue stuff.
Glue.
Glue, yeah.
We used to make all sorts of things with it. Yeah, flour mixed with water, yeah, pretty much. Yeah, so your inkjet printers, they've got, as they sound, they've got ink-filled cartridges. So what happens is that they spray the ink onto a page through little holes that Kerry mentioned, which we refer to as nozzles, and it patterns onto the page. There are a couple of different types of inkjet nozzles. There's the thermal, and with that you have a pulse of current, electrical current, and it gets supplied to the heating chambers, and then the goes the I'll get around to what I'm trying to get out of my around my tongue around. So it gets applied to the heating chambers around the nozzles, and the heat then has a bubble of steam in the chamber of it, and the steam forces the ink out through the nozzle and onto your paper. The other one is a type of nozzle is a piezoelectric. So in that you have the piezoelectric crystals, and they're actually located in the ink reservoir at the back of each of the nozzles. And you have a charge that's applied to the crystal, and that causes it to vibrate. And what happens then is the vibration of the crystal then controls the flow of ink that goes on to the paper. They use plain paper, which is an economical type thing. That's what something else you'll find a huge variety of prices in is your different price of the paper that you use. I like to pay a little bit more, but I use the recycled stuff for a lot of my stuff, depending on what I require, but it's quite good quality and it's being recycled, so I like that idea. You get different types of paper from the economical type, photo quality paper. That's another consideration when you're looking at the ongoing costs of your printer.
Just a point. Can anybody tell me what GSM stands for? Grams per square meter is correct. And I don't know whether that's in our notes or not. So if you get 80 GSM paper, that's 80 grams per square meter. And if you get 100 GSM per paper, then that's 100 grams per... So the higher the GSM number, the heavier the paper. So if you're looking at cardstock, you're looking at 200 GSM or 300 GSM. And that's worth knowing because some printers are only rated to between a certain GSM range. And also some, if you put too light a paper into a laser, it will catch fire. So you have to be aware of that. Yeah, there you go, Gordon. See, this is the, you learn all sorts of things at this place.
Okay, so some of your advantages of an inkjet printer would be the fact that it's low cost, relatively high resolution. Also, they're quick to start up, you know, warm up. Sometimes the laser ones take a little longer to warm up. Some of the disadvantages, I guess...
Yes, it is. I don't know if this is in the notes either. Sorry, Geraldine. I think you can actually calculate the running cost of a printer by actually working out how much per page it's going to cost you to run it. So you're looking at, say, with bubble jets and stuff, you're looking at 10 to 12 cents a page. And then for lasers and stuff, you're looking at... generally the 0.03 cents a page, and generally you calculate that by taking the cost of the ink tank and dividing it by the estimated number of pages that the ink tank will do. So say for example you've got a $20 cartridge, I don't know if anybody's got a calculator, I don't want to be bothered, $20 cartridge, and you're going to do 500 pages on it, so you say 20 divided by 500 and you get some sort of number, and I'll just find out what that is. Okay, you end up with 4 cents a page, because you get 0.04, and I think I've got to duck out and talk to somebody, so I'll be back.
Oh, okay. No problem. Okay, so some of the disadvantages I guess you would talk about there would be that some of your nozzles can be prone to clogging. Your ink cartridges, as I mentioned, are expensive, relatively expensive, and also the other thing that can happen is they come out a little bit damp. So you've got to be aware of that. If you're putting pages together, sometimes you can end up with smearing of the ink. So just a not a cool look, so not something you want to be happening. Okay, they are solid. Yes, Grace.
Oh, did you hear me?
No, because we must have a long ping again. I'll have to check that. We've got a bit
no,
of delay.
It's me. It's no problem at all.
It's you. Okay.
It was my button. What I said was don't order ink cartridges in the mail and then leave them out when it's, like, freezing and not check the mail one day because it'll just be not a good thing.
No, absolutely. Yes, frozen ink.
Yeah, they don't work.
Yeah, I suppose it gets a bit colder where you are.
Yeah, we have, like, a huge blizzard going on right now, so quite a bit.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. What's the temperature then? We digress here for a sec, folks.
16 degrees Fahrenheit, so below zero, y'all.
Ooh, that's a bit chilly. Okay. Okay, so solid ink printers, when you're using those, they've got a solid stick of ink rather than having a cartridge like full of ink or having a toner, a drum of toner. Ink sticks ink sticks. They are non-toxic, so you can sort of handle them easily. And what happens with them is you have the ink sticks melt and they spray the ink through the nozzles. So the ink, as in the other methods, gets sprayed onto the drum and then it transfers onto the paper. They're actually quite good in that they give you very good colour printing. And they're fairly easy to use, and they suit a lot of different paper types. But the printers themselves are quite expensive, so is the ink, and they're a little bit slow on the warm-up. But yeah, they're another option. All right, thermal printers, as they sound, they work, obviously, with heat. And the thermal paper that you actually get is treated chemically, so it's sort of got a funny feel to it, sort of a waxy feel. And what happens is the thermal paper becomes black when it gets heated, and the printer head are basically the width of the whole piece of the paper. So the parts of the print head, the whole of the print head heats up, and then the paper is on a roll generally, and it goes through, and the heat fuses the ink to the paper. That type of printing is, I guess, an advantage of it is that it's fairly good as far as you'll get a long life out of it, out of the printer, but your paper's expensive. If you're using images, they're not the best. And the paper, that type of thermal paper, has a short shelf life. So it won't always be something that you can just sort of leave for a while and then go back to. There's also dye sublimation printers, and they produce photo quality images, so really good for graphics and that sort of thing. And it uses solid sheets of ink, and what they do is they change directly from solid to gas, as they sound. And that process, why we call it sublimation printers, is that process is actually referred to as sublimating. So, and what happens is the printhead actually passes over a sheet that's got a whole lot of colours on it. And we call them cyan, magenta, yellow, and clear, or CMYO. And it does a pass for each of the colours. They give you high quality images, but they can be a few disadvantages because they're expensive. They're not good if you're just wanting to use grayscale. So again, it's horses for courses, whatever works for you, whichever's going to meet your needs. All right, so you've chosen your printer, you've decided what type's going to suit your needs. Now you've got to install it. Most of them are really easy to install. They come with your installation CD, and on that CD you'll have all your drivers. Also you'll have your manuals that come with it as well. So it's pretty much sort of step by step, follow the bouncing ball installing printers. They're all going to be slightly different in their setup, but generally it's putting in the CD. So obviously first thing you're going to do is when you get your box home, check that you've got everything in there, and make sure before you do anything with regarding to installation, make sure that you've removed all the packing materials. Now in printers they tend to put all these little bits of cardboard and little bits of pull-off tape and that in places that you, unless you've had a real good, as a blind person, had a real good feel around the printer, you may actually miss finding. So, and obviously things like your trays are going to be taped down. So just be really careful. Look, really have a good feel around the printer and make sure that you've removed all of the bits of packaging materials. Otherwise, when it comes to working it, you might be damaging it. Yeah, I'm not surprised. Yeah, I'm not surprised. I think we've all probably done that, because they do put sort of parts, little bits of tape in, and little bits of cardboard in places that you don't really think of. And yeah, I'm sure that's probably a whole lot of us have done that. And that's why I just sort of mentioned that, because you know, I've done it too. I'm honest. So you go to make it work and things don't work. So it's easy for people with sight. They can just look at it and see that little bit of tape or that little bit of cardboard packaging there that shouldn't be there. But for us, we've just got to have a really good feel around. So okay, so you've got your printer in place. You've unpacked it. And obviously now you've got to connect it up. So you've putting in the data cable to the communication port that's on the back of the printer. So it's usually, I don't know, you can use parallel, as we said, Firewire USB, and then you would connect your corresponding cable to the printer port. Oh, just a little digress here, folks. Yeah, just excuse us for a second, everybody. That's right. Hello. We have a visitor, folks. Just a moment. Okay, sorry, folks. We just had a visitor to the lab. Okay, so just mentioning that we'd be then connecting up the printer via the USB generally, but it could be by other methods. Putting the other end of the data cable to your corresponding port on the back of the computer. And obviously, if you're installing a network printer, you'd connect the network cable to the network port. After you've attached the computer data cable, you'd obviously attach the power cable. Now you might find in the CD it actually tells you to do these slightly out of order, and it might say to you, don't connect your USB cable yet. So whatever it guides you to do is what you do. One point here is make sure you don't plug your printer into an UPS. Anyone tell me what an UPS is? No? Okay, an UPS is an uninterruptible power supply. And the reason you don't plug your printer into an UPS is because you can get a power surge. So when your printer's turned on, it would actually damage your UPS unit. Anyone use an UPS? Now you know what it is.
I figured I was exempt.
Yeah. That's fine, Gemma.
Me too.
Yeah, yeah, no, they're very, very good to have, you know, in case you're having power fluctuations and power down outages, that type of thing. So, okay.
At first you think, oh, I've got to spend all this money, but then, you know, a year later when you realise how many, you know, parts of computers you didn't need to buy because they haven't blown up, but you really save.
Absolutely. And they've sort of come down in price too, haven't they?
Mm.
Well, it's a very good investment to have. So I think that, as Gemma said, it'll protect you, your hardware in the long term. So it's certainly very worthwhile having. Okay, what you'll find is when you actually have got to that stage of your installation process, you've put in your data cables and powered your printer, you'll find that the operating system will probably discover the printer and attempt to install the drivers. So that's at the stage generally where you'll be sort of consulting your CD, because it'll have all your drivers obviously on there, and up will come a wizard. So it's pretty as I said, follow the bouncing ball. It really is, it just steps you right through the whole process. Sorry, someone want to say something there? Mostly these days you'll find, most of them I've installed recently have been pretty accessible, so hopefully that's the case. Okay, so, all right, let me have, I'm just scrolling down to see what we need to talk about there. Okay, any questions up to that point? Or comments on printers? One thing, after you've finished installing your printer, it'll ask you actually generally to do a test page, and that test page just confirms that all your software, like your drivers and that, are installed and working correctly. So it's oftentimes it'll just do that automatically too. So but you can do it manually if you wish to. And you just go to your start menu and then obviously to your printers and faxes, and it then displays that printers and faxes menu. And then there's a general tab, or I think it's properties, general, and then print test page. So if you ever want to do that anyway, and perhaps you've just installed new cartridges to your printer and you want to just check it's working properly, you can also do it then. Okay. You can also do it from the command line too. So you go to the, type in CMD in the run box after you hit run, click OK, and then you can go print space the file.txt, and you can do a test page of whatever page that you wished to print. So number of ways you can test and do a print test. Okay, the other thing we needed to talk about today was scanners. I think most of us probably use scanners. Most of us would be using scanners with OCR. Anyone tell me what OCR technology is?
Optical character recognition.
That's correct, yep. And obviously for us, we're using OCR. That's correct. To read documents. A lot of us are using Kurzweil. Any other scanners that people are using out there? Types of... yep, that's correct. Who's using Kurzweil?
I am.
Yep, good program, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know what I'd do without it to read my mail.
Ah, yes. Yep, okay.
It's an essential in our house.
Yes. I am using the Find Reader.
I'm not, Srikanth, I'm not familiar with that one. Is that a good program?
ABB Wi-Fi Find Reader.
Yeah, actually it's a very good program, and with a good accuracy as well. Even Kurzweil uses the same Find Reader engine. So
yes,
that's a more appropriate thing indeed.
Okay. All that. Well, so we've got a few varieties. PDF converter. Yeah.
PDF to Word document converter.
Yes. Yep. I'm thinking. I'm not going to say this correctly. Akilesh. I hope I said that correctly. You're using Abbey Fine Reader. How do you find that?
ABB Wi-Fi Fine Reader.
This is me, Pratik. I'm also using the same. Yeah.
I'm Kiran.
Did
I'm
I
also
say your name correctly? Okay.
And actually, I would like to suggest all the guys who are not
I'm
using
also
it,
using
try out Fine Reader, and definitely you'll find it very good and with the complete accuracy. Especially the Fine Reader version 9 is pretty good.
Okay.
I am also using the same version. It's very good. It's very good. It gives accurate document, ABB Wi-Fi Fine Reader software.
If you're having anything in image, it can also convert to the text, like the PDF image files, which are being a trouble to read. It is able to scan and convert the text as well.
Excellent. Excellent. That sounds very interesting. It's really good to hear about the different programs that everybody's using.
And it's also accessible with JAWS too. It's quite accessible.
Excellent. What about cost feature?
Yeah, compared to Kurzweil, it's
I think it's way less expensive than Kurzweil.
Is it?
Yeah, that's less expensive.
Yeah, it's less
expensive. Reason being that the software is made for sighted person specifically. They have not made any kind of special preferences of visually impaired, so perhaps that's a reason. They haven't enabled any kind of speech outputs for that.
You got that right.
Okay. Yes, Scott, that's good. Yes, these programs are expensive, but I guess in the long term they do last a long time and make us independent, which is, you know, not always easy to find the money though, is it? Okay, so we've talked about some of the, we sort of digressed there, but we're really talking about different types of scanners. So we're looking at things like some of the all-in-one devices, flatbed scanners, handheld scanners, drum scanners. So there's a whole range of different scanners. And they're used to convert printed data or images into an electronic data format. So then the computer can then store it, process it as needed.
As on this with junction, printers, sorry to interrupt. I would just like to ask
that's
people,
okay.
Do anyone know that is there any software that can convert the handwritten text into the e-text? Because I really don't know. I'm certainly looking for it.
No, not at all.
Go on, that's okay.
Yeah, I have also searched in the internet that there are two, three softwares are there, but they are not really good, like, you know. I've tried
accurate.
The trial version, but no, they are not accurate at all.
It would be so hard to do that, because everybody's would be so hard to distinguish.
Different. Mm. I think that they're sort of slowly, looking at it, but at this stage of the game, there's none that I know of that are particularly accurate. What about you, Gemma? Do you know of any?
No, it's almost technically impossible.
Yeah. But who knows, eventually. but yeah, it's still in the mill. Okay. So like printers, your scanners are going to vary in cost. They're going to range, vary in... the range that you can choose from, you know, varying from very cheap to the very expensive. You're going to be looking at what the images are reproduced like. How good do they, how accurate are they? A lot of the time with scanners, what you pay for is what you get. Some of them, the cheaper ones are sort of not good, but some of the cheaper ones are reasonable. Depends on what you want them for. And I think that's the thing with printers and scanners, dependent on your needs, your budget also, but also what your needs are as to which type of scanner you're going to find is best for you. A lot of us use those all-in-one devices, so you've got printers, scanners, copiers and faxes. So I've got one of those sitting on my desk, find them really, really good. And it's great just to be able to go up and push a button, copy something very easily as well. It Have you? Yeah. The one I've got is very good. But then I paid quite a bit for mine, so and it might have something to do with it as well. Again, it's what your needs are and, you know, how much you want to pay, that type of thing. So when we're talking flatbed scanners, we often use those for things like books, photos, also for copying. A lot of people use them for copying as well. You can have flatbed scanners that use sheet feeders, or you can get the ones that you actually put the multiple pages in, and then it actually sort of picks up one page at a time and scans it in. Other types of scanners, things like your handheld scanners. Anyone got one of those for OCR recognition?
Handheld scanner.
Go on, sorry. How did you find it?
Hey, it's great when you are having a good day with coordination. Mm. But if your hands get shaky and all that good stuff, you are never going to be able to read anything.
Yeah, I didn't find them particularly reliable. So, but it's some time ago since I've used one. Yeah, they are. Mm.
Oh my goodness, they really are.
Yeah, and it can be very slow too.
Got to stop drinking.
What?
That's Jenny, Grace. Just ignore her. We do.
For your hands shaking, Grace.
That's what she's talking about.
Oh, no, I just have coordination problems sometimes.
She's a cheeky girl, our Jenny. Okay, go on, somebody want to say something? That's all right, we're just talking scanners, Kerry. Kerry's joining us again. Kerry has joined the channel.
Kerry has left the server. No, I'm back. Hello, everyone.
We were just talking about handheld scanners.
Oh, I hate handheld scanners. They are almost impossible for blind people to use because your hands wobble and you can't tell whether you're keeping it in line with the text. In fact, Robotron came out with a handheld scanner and had this little guide that you were supposed to lie on the paper and line it up and then slide it along, but it was very difficult to use. And don't get
I think that's the same one I used.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
It wasn't easy, yeah.
And we've actually got... And somebody mentioned barcode scanners. Don't get Gemma and I started about barcode scanners. It's sort of one of our latest hobbies.
Well, you better get started about it. Tell us.
Oh, barcode scanners. We've actually got, basically, they're scanners that read a matrix. It's a font, and it's got sort of lines and stripes and things in it. And there are barcodes on all sorts of things. I jokingly said I'd barcode my wife so that I could find her. And we actually do have iron-on barcode labels. We could actually do that. Not her personally, but possibly one of the shirts she wears. Basically, food's got barcodes on it. Electronics has got barcodes on it. And basically, if you run a scanner across the item, and some phones have barcode recognition in them. There is some free software for Symbian mobile phones if you've got a good enough camera and flash that you can go bleep, and it will recognise barcodes.
Oh, I want that.
I think your phone is capable of doing that. Question, Grace, does KNFB Reader do barcodes?
No, unfortunately.
We haven't actually played with the ones on the phone. We've actually got proper barcode scanners. I've got a Metrologic 9680, which cost me about $700. But it'll scan them upside down and back the front, and it'll scan them very, very quickly. In fact, you can wipe things across it, and it'll go beep, 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 and that... and KNFB Reader will do US currency. Yeah, we know that, because your currency sucks. It can't be differentiated if you can't see, unless you fold them up or get somebody to tell you. In fact, Quartzfile does US currency. Our currency actually has 7 mils difference between the lengths of the notes, and it has different shaped windows.
Easier to tell.
Absolutely. Mm. There we go. We run down the US again. Sorry.
Well, you guys are lucky.
I hated it last week.
Oh, hey, I agree with you on that one.
And all of ours is different colours, which helps for people like Alex who just rip it out and see what colour it is, and Gemma who does it by colour as well, I would wager.
Yeah, but the size helps too.
Oh, I bet it does. Actually, that's what I meant to ask you, and I probably should ask you off-channel, dear, but I was actually seriously thinking of getting one of those cobalt colour recognisers.
Don't.
No, oh, you don't
really
like them?
Really inaccurate.
Pam got
no,
hers
it's
working
how
just
you
fine.
Use it.
Okay, I found it. I use the Colorino one. I found that a bit more accurate than the cobalt one.
You want to tell?
We've got one. We like ours.
Okay. Do you want to explain to Scott very briefly in 30 seconds or less about the cobalt colour sensor, given the fact that we've just raised it?
You've got to have really good natural lighting is the best thing. Mum's got a lot of big windows in her house. And as soon as it starts talking, stop, release the button, because the longer you hold it in, the more confused it gets.
Well, I'll have a play with it again and see. I found it a little interesting.
I've just got it off.
Yeah, I think it's very sensitive to the sort of lighting you've got.
It has to be calibrated every time you use it.
Actually, if you've got mobile speak, you can use your phone.
You can, although does that cost money, the colour recogniser that they sell, or not?
Yeah, I don't think it's as expensive as the cobalt one. Though.
No.
You've just got to have a blank piece of paper that you carry around with you all the time.
Somebody's got an open mic. Who's got an open mic?
I'm trying to get back on. I can't hear you guys again. The mute's not...
You're still on, Geraldine.
Yeah, you can hear me. I can't hear you.
Might be time to mark where you're up to and reboot.
Yeah, I will.
I'm just going to finish off because Geraldine said we're almost near the end of the lecture, and I can finish off a little bit and then Geraldine can reboot after that. But yeah. Yeah, actually, which is a bit of a problem. Yeah, look, I'd be interested to see one of these cobalt colour thingies at some point. I don't know whether I'll wander down to the shop or whether you guys can bring yours in and I'll have a look, waving meaningfully at Trevor and Jenny to see how they behave. But yeah, and in fact, interestingly enough, and I know we've wandered a little bit off topic, but it is important, the strength of the light you've got, because as far as I know, and I stand to be corrected, things actually look different colours depending on what intensity of light they're under. Or they can be perceived as a slightly different colour. Colour is certainly not an exact thing. It goes through a whole series of shades, ironically enough, which is why they're called shades. And it can actually make a difference. For example, we had a blind person who had a KNFB reader, and I think it was on the old N82, which isn't old, but you can actually run the KNFB reader on the 6120, I'm told, or the 6120... Can't remember which one it is, but it's got to have a xenon flash. So somebody who can be bothered can look up those specs. And you can actually run it on that. And yes, and the N95's got a crummy slide, so don't buy one. And what you can actually do is you can use it to read things. Now, if 6220, thank you. And if you actually have good light, the KNFB reader works quite well. In fact, it will work with the flash, but there was actually somebody who was actually trying to read something in the dark and they couldn't figure out why the KNFB reader couldn't read it. And my friend Gary said to them, well, have you turned the lights on? And the person said, no, I haven't. And he said, well, it can't see. And in fact, I couldn't see if the lights weren't on, so I go turn the lights on. And she turned the lights on, and it read the things she wanted to read. I don't know why the flash wasn't sufficient in her case, but turning the lights on did make a big difference to the behaviour of the scanner and stuff. Yeah, probably the new versions don't need the lights on. Would that be true? Ah, right.
I don't know, though. On a really dark computer screen, it won't work, even if the flash is on.
No, it won't. I guess... Yeah, but I don't know, I don't bother with the polarizers, I rip them off.
I think the other thing, I think
those
the key
are the worst
to it working...
Those are the worst made things, too.
I was just going to say that the key to whether it works or not would actually be the contrast between the lighting level and the material that it's reading. If it's got a high contrast ratio, I mean, given the way a lot of blind people and normal people sort of wobble around and can't hold things rock steady, it's got to do a lot of correction for jitter and skew and phase variance and stuff. I just had to put phase variance in because it's always in Star Trek and it sounds cool. But, you know, definitely the contrast and stuff really does make a difference. And you need to move back. Yeah, there we go.
Oh, hooray.
I think what we might actually do in future, Geraldine, and I don't know whether you've got one or I'll bring one in, is we'll stick the USB sound dongle in.
I think I actually hit a mute button somehow.
Okay. Yeah, ooh, yeah. Well, I'm not going to say that on channel. So, yeah.
What was that? I missed that.
So there you go. So it really makes a difference on the contrast and stuff as far as that. And the other thing I seem to recollect, and somebody, I'll try searching this up later, but I think there is actually a free colour recogniser for Symbian. I have no idea how good it is, but I think there is a free one.
Yeah, there is. I haven't looked into it, but there is one. It definitely is.
Yeah, and whilst we don't endorse any particular company on this channel, I'd just like to point out that Scott works for TNT Consultancy, and he's a really helpful bloke, and any more than that I really can't say, but very knowledgeable fellow. And you might want to get in touch with him if you want more information on something that he's mentioned, and he might be able to help you. He might not too, but certainly the... we'll look at the free one, and I'd also recommend people have a look at a thing that I talked about yesterday called Seeing with Sound, www.seeingwithsound.com. And in fact,
yes, that's quite interesting. That one.
In fact, I might actually inflict Jen with it later on her EAP because she's got a web camera on there, and she can stick the headphones on and point it at doorways and things and see if the sound image makes any sense to her, having previously had sight. That'll be fun. Yeah, so you get to be the lab.
It made no sense to me.
I can probably explain that to you at some point when we're not in the middle of a lecture, because it does actually make sense if you think about how the rasterizing works. And then again, you might not care, but if you do, I'll explain it to you, because it started making sense to me. Sorry, Geraldine, I'll let you get back to your lecture now.
No, that's okay. You thought you got rid of me, didn't you? Actually, I want to digress for just a second to ask our Indian students... on the point where I dropped out, we just finished talking about the size of notes and that type of thing. What is the currency like for a blind person in India? How hard is it to differentiate your notes?
Are the Indians there? I'm just going to have a look.
Yeah, we are here. Don't worry.
Ah, yes. Yeah, there they are.
It's not much hard.
It's not hard, did you say?
Yeah, we can locate it by the shape and the size of the currency.
Okay. Have you seen the US currency in your country? Have you seen
it's
the US currency?
It's
very difficult to tell.
Yes.
It's all the same size. Mm.
I'd just like to say hello to Chantel, who's materialised on today. I just noticed. How slow am I? It's all right. You don't have to say anything if you don't want to. But we're really happy to have you on board, and we hope you'll be rocking on to a few more lectures. Unless, of course, you are unable to, and that's okay too, but we're happy to see you on board. And Scott, of course, as everybody knows, has a new microphone, so he's the all-new Hi-Fi Scott.
Yeah, sorry, I'll go back to the other one in the future.
No, it's okay. You're allowed to be the Hi-Fi Scott. We'd like to be able to understand you.
Yes, it's nice and clear, actually. Okay, all right. Thank you, Kerry, for taking over. So I think we sort of killed off printers and scanners pretty much. So let's do a quick quiz.
Oh, sorry, I just wanted to make add my two bobs worth about scanners, because I haven't actually made my two bobs worth about scanners. Did we talk about the problems of low-profile scanners and contact image sensors?
No.
Okay. Just a thing to be aware of, and I'm sure Scott will back me up on this one as well, if he's had experience. You can get certain scanners, such as the Canon CanoScan, sort of the Lide 20s and the Lide 30s and stuff. I'm not sure what the current model numbers are, but they're actually a low profile scanner, and they're the 80. Okay, yep, and they're about as thick as a telephone book. Maybe, like a thin telephone book, maybe an inch thick, and you sort of look at this scanner and you go, oh, this is great, it's USB powered. I'll get to that in a minute. And it will fit in your backpack. Well, that's provided you don't that's provided you don't smash the scanner glass in, but it will. If you got like a pocket for it, like a laptop pocket, it'd be okay. But one of the problems with them is that they draw all of their power from the USB. They use a cold cathode LED. So you're basically looking at drawing at about 2 amps at 5 volts or so to run this thing. And if you're running your laptop off batteries, it's going to drain your laptop slash netbook quite quickly. So be aware of that. And also, they are fairly durable, which is good to know, but it probably pays to lock them when you're going to put them in your backpack because you don't want the scanner carriage sliding backwards and forwards all the time.
Actually, that's a good point on any scanner, isn't it, to make sure there is a lock on the base, so make sure...
Yeah, in fact, if you turn it on and it goes... If you actually turn it on and it goes...
yeah, it's locked.
but the problem with this... But the problem with these scanners, with the Lide 80s and Lide 100s, the really low-profile ones, as I said, they draw a hell of a lot of power off USB. The material that you're scanning has to be in contact with the glass or as close to the glass as you can get it because the range of the cathode isn't very high, or the LED, and they can be a bit slow. But if you want portable scannability and you don't have the money for a KNFB reader, then they are certainly a good option and certainly worth considering. Maybe if you are going to carry it around, I would recommend perhaps a powered USB hub if you do have the access to a couple of power points, one for your laptop and one for your powered USB hub and scanner, because you'll probably get better results off a powered USB hub. Unless, of course, there are low-profile ones that have a wall brick. Do you know if there are any of those, Scott, where you can actually wall brick them and USB them and they're the low-profile, or are they only usually the fatter ones?
Yeah, I haven't seen any. I've seen the thinner ones. Generally, I've found they just run on USB, but I've still got one that charges from the walls, an HP 5300C.
Oh, they're a good bit of kit, the old HP 5300C.
And it's still going strong, and it was parallel and USB. I think it was one of the first to have USB in it.
We actually are pretty fond of the Epson Perfection series of scanners, the 2480s, the 3480s, and we've got a 3480 and it's quite fast and it's very responsive and the Twain driver behaves itself, which means we don't have any Twain strikes. Oh, I just had to get that one in there. okay. It's all good. Now let's get on to Geraldine's quiz.
When it's not bad.
Yeah, we'll that's good.
This is interesting. We've got a bit of delay there.
Somebody's got an open mic. Who is it? It's stopped now.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And one of the other things is and this is actually just a gotcha for people, if you actually switch off the switch on the headset, it will actually switch you a lot of times back to your internal microphone on the actual netbook. So just be aware that the mute switch will often switch you to the internal microphone, so don't sort of flick the mute switch and start swearing at the client, which of course you'd never do because you're all professional, because it might actually come through.
Okay. All right, chat window's open. Just a quick quiz. Question one. Which technology is used by dot matrix printers? Is it A, digital drop, B, electrostatic spray, C, electrophotographic, D, ink melting, or E, impact? It's dot matrix printers. Everybody got that right. Yes, E. Well done. Which phase of the laser printing process includes applying toner to the latent image? Is it A, the cleaning, B, conditioning, C, developing, D, fusing? Getting a lot of B's there. No, it's actually not. It's the developing. It's C.
Yes, because what actually happens, you're developing the image onto the drum, and then the drum fixes the image onto the paper. That's how I remember it anyway.
Okay, now the next one's got to choose three, so I'm going to just say yes, no answers here, all right? It's a bit hard when you're getting up to three to remember. Okay, what are the disadvantages of impact printers? So yes, no answer, or YN will do. Are they expensive, impact printers?
Oh, that's interesting. I believe the correct answer is no in the notes.
Correct answer is no.
In fact, dot matrix printers aren't really common, and for a good 24-pin dot matrix printer, it'll cost you about $350. So the real-world answer is yes, but that's okay. They want no, guys.
Do they have high power consumption? That is no. They don't have high power consumption.
It's lasers that have high power consumption, fellas and gals. Mm.
Okay, what about limited colour capability? Yes, they do have limited colour capability, that's correct. Are they noisy? That's correct, they are noisy. And are they slow to print? Yes, they are. Relatively speaking, they are. Okay, all right. Which type of printer melts ink and then sprays it through a nozzle onto a drum to transfer an image onto paper? Is it A, fusion ink, B, impact, C, inkjet, D, laser, E, solid ink, or F, thermal? Oh, we can get
all over the place, people. Let me give you a hint. It melts the ink.
For those that said E, you are correct. It is solid ink. That was the last one we talked about, folks. Okay. Which type of printing process uses solid sheets of ink that change directly to gas when the print head heats the ink? Is it A, impact, B, inkjet, C, laser, or D, dye sublimation?
That's correct. Interestingly enough, iodine, I think, is one of the components of sublimation dye printers, and iodine is actually a sublime compound. It goes directly from solid to a gas. Can anybody give me another example of a sublime compound or a sublime substance?
Kerry.
No,
he's
not me.
Sublime, isn't he?
I am.
I was being nice to you.
Sorry?
Camphor.
Camphor is another example. And another interesting example is carbon dioxide. Everybody remember dry ice? Hey, we get it with our light and easy, and we play with it in the sink and bubble things up. We have witch's brew in the sink.
It bubbles up well, doesn't it?
Well, the other thing you can do is you actually jam a whole lot of it into a Coke bottle, fill the Coke bottle with water, screw the lid on, and throw it and run like hell. I wouldn't recommend anybody do that, by the way, but it can be lots of fun.
Okay, next question. Which peripheral is used to convert paper documents into electronic files? Is it A, a digital reader, B, a printer, C, a projector, or D, a scanner? Yeah, everybody got that right, scanner. Okay, how is the speed of a laser printer measured? Is it in A, dots per minute, B, pages per minute, C, pixels per second, D, pages per second? Interesting. Okay, those that got B, you were correct. It's pages per minute. That's all right, Jenny. Okay, so that brings us to the end of this week's module. Next week we're going to be talking all about networks. Yeah, you're getting into some interesting stuff.
Okay, can I just make an announcement or two?
I was about to do the same, but you go.
Okay, you go first, and then I'll go, because beauty before techie.
Thank you, dear. Okay. All I was going to say, I believe, Chantel, you're coming on at 12 o'clock today. Anybody that would like to come on Ventrilo at 12 o'clock, one of our master's research students at Curtin University needs a group of people to talk to about Braille devices. That's okay. If you can, you can. If you can't, you can. You can't, I mean.
Okay. Yeah, we're talking about Braille input methods.
Braille input devices,
and
yes.
What you liked and about them, what you didn't
Braille
like.
Braille devices.
He's doing a PhD on those, and he's come up with a model of Braille input devices, which one of our students has already ripped to pieces, which was good, but a bit demoralising for the poor bloke. Made him rethink it all. And what's hot and what's not. 12 Perth time, which is it's 9 p.m. your time, Grace, and it's
8:30
an hour and a half's time. Yeah, 8:30.
Yeah, 10:30.
Yeah, 8:30.
Oh, yes, sorry. Yeah. Yes, that's right.
If we haven't filled out the form, can we still come? And if we can, Seth might be interested in showing up if you guys would want his input, because I think he has
certainly
a lot of input on that.
Mm. No, that would be great, because anybody who can come, that would be really good.
And of course, anybody who is in this, you will be sent a consent form that says, I consent to the fact that nothing bad has been done to little animals, dolphins, fishies, and I ethically believe in this study, and I said stuff, and it's okay for you to say that I said stuff, essentially. So that's the form you'll be signing off, because they have all this ethics and stuff that goes on in university.
Mm. But it's not daunting or anything. But we'd probably only be, I would think, probably half an hour or so on the...
I'd say we'll be about an hour and a half by the time everybody said everything. But I'll be a bit more realistic. But
well, even if you can spend half an hour, that would be good, because we can always put you on first.
Absolutely. Also,
so that should be, 10:30 Indian time?
No,
8:30. Oh, okay.
8:30.
3.5 hours difference at the moment.
Oh, 3.5 hours. Oh, yes, of course. Yes, Scott. Yeah, we'll arrange that.
Okay. Yeah, we can certainly do that. I mean, we'll certainly get your input. Otherwise, the other thing we can do, Scott, is we can get him in touch with you directly, and you can, you guys can communicate or email or whatever. So, yes, we will let you go first. But if you've really got so much to say that everybody else comes and clubs you down, we can get you in touch directly with him, and you guys can no worries. Okay.
Okay, that's great.
Daylight saving ends on Saturday night. Perth will be rejoicing.
No! I like it. No, I like it.
That's the way. We like it. Okay. So, daylight savings finishes on Saturday night, and we all get an extra hour of sleep. Or I'd like to think an extra hour of snuggle time. Probably just an extra hour of sleep. No, Sydney doesn't. You guys are in for another week. We're talking about Perth here. It's all about us in WA. Perth. Yeah. Yeah, nobody cares unless we talk about ourselves. I mean, if Perth disappeared, the only thing you guys would think was where'd that place go that won the America's Cup in 82. Now, 83. Daylight Savings finishes at 2 in the morning on Sunday morning. We roll our clocks back by an hour, which is a pain because you end up sitting around with all your little talking watches going bing, 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 bing 23 times, and then if you muck it up again, you've got to go another 23 round to move the hour
around.
So we'll all be looking forward to that.
Lecture time's changing next week.
Lecture times, they are a changing. Okay, so people, wherever you are, it's going to go back by an hour. So there's going to be 2.5 hours between us and India, which means that you will get up at 6:30. Or you'll get up at 5:30 and have two coffees and be more awake, whatever you want to do. And that if you guys can't stay for as long, we understand that we're going to have to compress the guts of the lecture into the first hour, and then we might actually then go sort of range out into the second hour for those who can stay. So it, just let us know on the lists and stuff what will happen if the lecture starts at 6:30 instead of 5:30. If anybody has any preferences for other times or things when we want you to sessions and stuff, will you please let us know on the list so that we can think about possibly doing that? Do we need to come on later in the day for question and answer session, or is that just not worth it? And if so, what time and all those sorts of things. Also, guys, I want to see some more students use those email lists. That's they're there for you, they're not there for us. So we'll help you on the lists and you can ask questions and stuff. Yes, it might be a bit troublesome for some people, but unfortunately we've got so many people scattered across so many time zones, we can only keep some of the people happy some of the time. So even if you can turn up for half an hour or something, that would be better than nothing, so 6:30 till 7:30 your time or something like that. RAM module for printer. To be honest with you, consult the manual. To be honest with you, that is the simple answer. You need the manual for the printer, which can be gotten off the website, and you need to consult the manual for that printer and then make sure you order the RAM module for the printer that they recommend, because not all SIMs and DIMMs will work in printers. They've got to be certain speeds and certain bit width. It does say that in the notes.
It does say it in the notes, yeah.
Also, while I'm doing the announcy-nouncy thing, the netbook chat will go up in about half an hour to 45 minutes, and I will restart the web server. We've had some people crawling our web space, leeching everything we've got down, so I've got to figure out a way of stopping them dead in their tracks, so that they don't they can only crawl certain subsections of the site. I'm not sure how we're going to do that. Maybe we'll put in some image-based captures. Just kidding. And we'll put that up in about half an hour to 45 minutes, our discussion on netbooks. And then what we want to know is, do we need to do Netbooks Part 2? Because I don't think we got through as much of the stuff as we wanted to. So we need to hear from you all whether we want to do Netbooks Part 2 next week or whether we want to do something else. And you can do that on the amazing mailing list. Yeah, okay. No, password... Actually, I was thinking of password protecting the student resources, but there are lots of people who do need to look at some of the stuff we've got. So... I don't know, there might be some anti-crawly things we can do.
You know, on one of the sites I'm on, they have a word-based CAPTCHA. They just ask some obscenely, you know, easy question, and you can just click on the answer that's right, and if you answer right, you get into the site. If you don't, you don't.
That's a good idea. We might look at that.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, because I wouldn't just like to slow people down, because we've got so much audio and stuff up there and people just cut sick with their mirrors. I mean, we understand that you guys want a mirror, but you're also going to understand that we're going to come down on you like the hounds of hell if you do it in the middle of lecture, because our ping times will go through the roof. We're not passionate or anything. We're really quite easygoing people. So Netbooks Part 2. All right, we'll do Netbooks Part 2 next week for those who want to listen to Netbooks Part 2. And we'll try and talk about some other aspects of Netbooks and things, and maybe we'll get some user experiences and stuff and talk about the different things. I mean, we've got a lot of it done this week, but we might do Netbooks Part 2 next week. And we want to hear from the rest of you guys whether you think that would be a good idea after you've heard the audio file, which I will be pushing up in about half an hour, which I'll be encoding over morning tea. Also, version 3.0 of the Victor Reader Stream software is coming out very, very soon, and it's all very exciting. Us stream users will be salivating, preferably not over our streams, because they're not waterproof. And we'll be loading that on, and we'll see how it all goes. I'm actually going to get mine and eventually and tear the InitRamps image apart, and change all the voice samples so they're not this sort of doty Canadian bloke. Anybody else got any other questions, issues, concerns, wibbles, wobbles, or things they need counselling on before next lecture? Silence is golden, and there's no green I see. Okay. No worries, guys. I think we're at the end of the lecture.
We'll see you... I won't. But if...
an hour and a half's time for those who want to be involved. So yeah, that's right, an hour and a half's time for those who want to be involved in, well, an hour and 21 minutes if you want to. Yeah,
20 minutes.
T minus 1 hour and 20 minutes and counting for the Braille. Let's all fight with each other about what's good and bad about a Braille interface.
Okay, folks. Kerry will be on next Wednesday. I'll see you next Friday. Have a good one.
Same to you.
All right.
Same
have
to
a good
you.
Weekend.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot.